This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Why the Iowa polls were wrong. I'm Bruce Johns and in for Gordon Deal along with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this hour.
Political pollsters are trying to regroup after missing the mark on both sides of the Iowa caucuses. They say they underestimated the turnout of evangelical voters and the anger of the electorate.
The Super Bowl is here. Time to get ready for the big game and all those new commercials.
U.S. residents could soon be benefiting from a new earthquake early warning system.
And the latest U.S. invasion of Cuba.
Pretty much anyone who can dream up a good educational reason can get there. And it's still not open for tourists, but all of the paperwork has eased. And it's much faster to get there now. You can take direct flights from New York and L.A.
That's Ellen Gamerman of the Wall Street Journal, who will have more on the new era of U.S.-Cuban relations in about 20 minutes. A lot of what you heard about leading up to the Iowa caucuses earlier this week was that Republican Donald Trump was on top of 13 different polls. But as we now know, he lost to Ted Cruz by 4 points. Even the Democratic race was much tighter than expected, with Hillary Clinton edging out Bernie Sanders by just 0.3%. So the big question is, why were the polls in Iowa so wrong? USA Today Washington correspondent Deirdre Shusgreen has some answers, and she joins us now. Deirdre, what happened to the polls in the Hawkeye State?
So the polls, you know, really did not predict the outcome, and I think, you know, there are several reasons for that. One, this is a very volatile political climate, and pollsters, you know, have a harder time predicting what's going to happen when there are so many candidates on the Republican side, so many candidates in the race, and a lot, you know, the vote really splintering. And then also, Iowa is just notoriously difficult to predict. It's a caucus state, and it has a quirky process. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where people, you know, you have to participate in an event that happens at a set time, so you can't just swing by and vote quickly. So they have a harder time figuring out who is going to turn out. And so on the Republican side, you had, for example, a lot of the polls underestimated the evangelical turnout, and that turned out to be crucial to Senator Ted Cruz's victory in Iowa.
And one could say that the polls underestimated Cruz's get-out-the-vote operation.
Absolutely. You know, no one knew for sure both, you know, how strong Ted Cruz's get-out-the-vote operation was going to be, but also how strong Donald Trump's get out the vote operation was going to be. There were strong questions, you know, deep questions about the Trump organization and the depth of his support and whether those folks would really turn out, because there was prediction was that he was bringing a lot of new voters into the fold. And what turned out is that, yes, he brought out a lot of new voters, but he also brought out a lot of sort of inconsistent voters who came out to vote against him. And so that was something that folks did not quite predict.
We are talking to USA Today Washington correspondent Deirdre Shusgreen about her article, Why Iowa Polls Were Wrong. All right, now the question is, was it all an aberration for pollsters? Do we get back on track with them for New Hampshire and beyond? Or is there concern now about how reflective the polls are for the voting public?
Well, the pollsters I talked to really strongly defended their work. And they note that, one, they weren't that far off. And two, polls are a snapshot of, you know, what, you know, of the electorate at a certain point in time. And so they're going to miss late shifts, and they're not going to be able to perfectly predict an election outcome. And some polls even did have hints of, for example, Senator Marco Rubio's surge at the end in Iowa, and highlighted the possibility that if there was a high evangelical turnout, Cruz would do better. I think you know, some experts I talked to said the problem with polls is less about how accurate they are, but more about how obsessed the candidates and the media have been with the polls and sort of the who's up, who's down, horse race element of the race, and sort of so overplaying the significance of the polls and their ability. Expert I talked to said, you know, the current climate sort of sets pollsters up to fail because we put so much stock in them. And the candidates, including Donald Trump, you know, spend a lot of time obsessing over the polls.
And you look at the fact that the venerable Des Moines Register poll, which is normally the gold standard, even they had it wrong on the Republican side.
Right. And, you know, they were one interesting thing about that poll in particular was that it was taken during right before and right after the final Republican debate. And if you'll recall, Donald Trump boycotted that debate. And so the poll could have missed the impact of that decision, and that may have hurt him. And the poll didn't quite pick that up.
Deirdre, thanks. That is Washington correspondent Deirdre Sesgreen of USA Today. It is now 12 minutes after the hour on this weekend.
You've heard me talking a lot about The Great Courses, and now they're offering something new, The Great Courses Plus Video Learning Service, an unlimited access to a huge library of The Great Courses lecture series in so many fascinating subjects. The great part is they're giving our listeners an incredible opportunity right now. Watch one of their popular courses, Understanding Investments, absolutely free. Understanding Investments is presented by award-winning professor of financial economics at Duke University, Connell Fullenkamp. The course explains the fundamentals of investing for those not familiar with the process and also covers areas that more experienced investors find beneficial. Just for a limited time, The Great Courses Plus is offering this morning listeners a chance to stream this course, Understanding Investments, a $215 value, and hundreds of other courses for free. Stream from any internet-connected TV, PC, or through the Great Courses Plus apps. But this free offer is only available for a limited time, so hurry. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/deal. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/deal.
You know, watching the Super Bowl means looking forward not only to the game featuring Denver and Carolina, but the halftime show and all those new TV commercials. Gordon Deal has more on those ads we all love.
We're speaking with Richard Krevelin. He's author of a book called The Hook, How to Share Your Brand's Unique Story to Engage Customers, Boost Sales, and Achieve Heartfelt Success. So as we look toward the Super Bowl here, Richard, what do you kind of expect in terms of some storytelling?
Oh, I'm expecting some puppies, I think. You know, we're going to get some cute animals. We're going to get some funny stuff, and hopefully we'll have some surprises, some things that we don't expect. But I think we're going to get a lot of people spending a lot of money, and I hope we're going to see some things that are different. But what do you think?
Well, I think the expectations are always fairly high. You know, I want to laugh during these commercials. I don't want to see something too serious. I mean, this is the Super Bowl, so don't hit me with the sadness, you know?
Yeah, you know, a comedy, you know, I love comedy. I write comedies, and I think a lot of the audience is looking forward to, you know, really great comedy. I think sometimes brands are scared of comedy because, you know, if it's not funny, it can backfire and hurt the brand. So, you know, it's always a risk. My brother is a creative director at a big agency, and he's also a stand-up comedian. He's always pushing to get comedies made in terms of, you know, the commercials. And a lot of times he's getting pushback from the brands because they're afraid to go in the direction of comedy.
So absent the comedy, then, if you're a small business or a big firm that's afraid of, say, I don't know, the odds being 50-50, how do you tell a good story then? What's the key?
Well, the key is, you know, for me, I've spent years studying it, and I kind of came to this golden rule, which is an engaging character actively must overcome tremendous obstacles to reach a desirable goal. And in terms of a business, then, that engaging character can be the founder of the company. It can be a product story. It can be a consumer story. But, you know, if you think about any movie or Super Bowl TV commercial, you gotta care about the people in the story. We care about the Budweiser puppy. We want him to get home alive. you know, and if it's easy for them to achieve their goals, there is no story. And if you think about the movies or commercials that don't work, you know, it breaks one. You might have an actor we love who becomes this engaging character, but their journey is one that doesn't involve us, and you know, there's just too much other things to do in our lives. So if the story's not compelling, we're going to turn away.
Right. We're speaking with Richard Krevelin. He's author of a book called The Hook, How to Share Your Brand's Unique Story to Engage Customers, Boost Sales, and Achieve Heartfelt Success. Generally speaking, do you find that there's payoff for companies that advertise in the Super Bowl?
I think, you know, they're expecting about 120 million people, so it's kind of the best chance of the year to reach a huge amount of people. And if they, you know, capture lightning in a bottle and create a really great piece of advertising, it's an amazing opportunity. So it becomes incumbent. You know, for me, what's fun is to see the artists involved, the directors, the filmmakers, the actors, and to see if they can pull off something that's uniquely engaging in such a short period of time. You also see more than ever, you know, if you think about it, we really never see 60-second TV ads anymore except during the Super Bowl. And it's fun to see these talented people when they have more time to really tell a little bit better story, and they have bigger budgets than a lot of low-budget filmmakers will make a whole movie for a few hundred thousand dollars. And these people are getting millions of dollars to do a 30 or 60-second ad.
What have some of your favorites been along the way, Super Bowl ads that jump out at you?
Well, I think everybody always remembers the Apple Macintosh ad that was just aired that once. That was amazing. And I am an animal lover, so, I do tend to be like a lot of America. I also enjoyed the ones where they had Betty White getting hit by flying football players. That was, you know, so it's the comedies a lot of times, like you said, that do stay with us.
Author Richard Krevelin with our own Gordon Deal talking about Americans' obsession with those Super Bowl TV commercials. It is now 21 minutes after the hour on this weekend.
Your employees want to do their best work. Give them the power to do it with new high-performance Dell systems like the XPS 13, featuring the world's first virtually borderless Infinity Edge display. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times their performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/business.
The commercial invasion of Cuba has begun. Jennifer Kashinka has more on the new era of U.S.-Cuban relations.
The stampede is on. With relations thawing between the U.S. and Cuba, artists, entertainment companies, and tourists are all pouring into the island nation. With more on the story is Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, it seems the rules are constantly changing. At this point, who's allowed to go to Cuba?
Well, pretty much anyone who can dream up a good educational reason can get there. And it's still not open for tourists, but all of the paperwork has eased, and it's much faster to get there now. You can take direct flights from New York and L.A., and if you are going for what they call people-to-people cultural sort of reasons, which can translate into just any sort of workshop or meeting with an artist, you can get there legally.
So that's the way a tourist, an average person, would kind of get around that rule, right?
Yeah, and if that seems a little confusing, there are travel agents all over the place who will help you put together a little itinerary and, you know, with some cultural things to do, which is what our story is about, and just, you know, you would have a few days or however long you want to spend there all mapped out for you. Or you could do something that gives you more time. It just, you would need to prove that you weren't just lying on the beach under a palm tree.
Now, why do entertainment companies want to get a foothold in Cuba?
Well, for one thing, it's just the lure of something new. People haven't been there, and there's a real thirst for this exotic location, and you can play out all kinds of interesting plots that would have to do with Cuba's relationship with the U.S. And Cuba itself is just so beautiful and looks locked in time from the 1950s, and with, you know, all of the, you know, the buildings are often untouched, and there are many cars from the 50s there. And so it really is, you know, you point your camera anywhere and you have a beautiful shot in Havana.
Ellen, you talk about entertainment companies. Are we talking about film crews, TV shows? What kinds of entertainment companies?
Yeah, House of Lies from Showtime just shot their season finale down there, and I think that'll air in April. Fast and Furious, Universal Pictures is looking to put their next Fast and Furious film there, at least for part of the movie. And just, you know, all kinds of smaller filmmakers and people looking for something new and exotic are heading down there.
Of course, Cuba has a great reputation for music. Are there groups of musical performers trying to set up concerts there?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of that. There's always been to some degree. It's just now promoters in the U.S. will say it's easier to get these musicians up to the U.S., and it's easier to bring those musicians down to Cuba. And before it used to be, well, you know, we'd put it on the calendar, and maybe 8 of the 10 musicians would get here from a group, and the 9th and 10th who couldn't, whose visas were pulled at the last minute, you know, they were the key members of the band, let's say. So it was always very stressful.
What are some of the challenges that companies and or artists coming from the U.S. going to Cuba are facing?
There are a lot of logistical challenges still. It's hard to make a phone call without a local cell phone. It's very hard to get on the internet depending on where you're staying, what hotel you're in. It just is a country that is trying to, in many ways, trying to rise up to certain standards of customer service that just there haven't been that. I mean, there have always been tourists there, but in terms of American tourists and trying to meet what Americans expect when they go abroad, when I was down there, I must have answered like 2 or 3 customer service surveys. So it was just, there's a real focus on trying to change that as well.
Are there any dangers for U.S. citizens in Cuba?
Not that I saw. One thing that you have to do is credit cards are all but impossible there. So you have to bring cash, and you should bring a lot of it, you know, just in case you need to get a new hotel room or, you know, there's a lot that you have to pay for right out of your pocket. And that probably makes Americans nervous walking around with that much cash. But other than that, the sort of refrain was that there was very little crime to worry about.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gammerman along with Jennifer Kashinka. I'm Bruce Johnson. It's 30 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, a new earthquake early warning system could be headed our way.
This portion of the program is brought to you by Shari's Berries. Valentine's Day is next week, and finding the right gift can be tricky. You want to give her something unique that she'll love. Sending Shari's Berries is a guaranteed way to hit the mark. You can get freshly dipped strawberries from Shari's Berries starting at $19.99. That's over a 40% savings. And if you really want hero status, you can double the berries for just $10. Just go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in my code GordonPC. These giant strawberries are picked at the peak of freshness to ensure the best gift experience, and they're dipped in white milk and dark chocolatey goodness. As always, delivery is guaranteed. Here's the only way to get this Valentine's Day special: juicy, huge, and freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99, or double the berries for just $10 more. Call 866-FRUIT-02 or visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Order today. Click the microphone in the top right corner and type in Gordon PC. That's berries.com. Click the microphone and enter my code GordonPC.
FEMA says the possibility of a huge earthquake in California, Oregon, and Washington State is possible. All three have experienced many quakes in years gone by, but residents of those states and the nation could soon be benefiting from a new prototype earthquake early warning system. Joining us now to talk about it is Professor John Vidali from the University of Washington and the director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. John, detail the new system.
The system essentially builds a seismic network of sufficient, you know, power that we can see earthquakes very quickly as soon as they begin, and then broadcast warning to the people who are about to be shaken before the shaking arrives. So we can give anywhere from a few seconds of warning up to a few minutes of warning, depending how far from the people the earthquake begins.
So we are talking about potentially saving thousands of lives and also millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's the goal. And, you know, this study suggests that we can reduce the impact of earthquakes by tens of percent. You know, we can't erase the damage. Some buildings just will have problems, and some earthquakes won't have sufficient lead time to take all the possible steps. But, you know, we're aiming to reduce the impact of earthquakes, which, you know, are estimated in the long run to cost about $5 billion a year for the U.S.
We're talking right now with Professor John Vidali of the University of Washington, also director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. And John, the project we're talking about has received a $6 million grant to help create the new system. How valuable is that funding?
Well, that really jump-started us. You know, that came from the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, and they've given a couple million to each of Caltech, Berkeley, and the University of Washington. And that has, between, you know, letting us make a prototype system to demonstrate that we can operate and helping us connect with the corporations and the city and state officials, it's given us political momentum. So it's taken us to now up to about halfway toward the amount of money we need to run this network in the long run. About $8 million a year is what we're slated to get from Congress at this point. But the full system costs $16 million a year to cover the West Coast, you know, the states of Oregon, Washington, and California.
And I am told FEMA has said that the possibility of a huge quake in that area is possible.
Yeah, there are several very bad scenarios of earthquakes. You know, one is the San Andreas fault through the Bay Area or Los Angeles, but the one that we've heard the most about in the last year is the magnitude 9 earthquake along the northwest coast, which would be similar to the one that hit Japan a few years ago or Sumatra a few years before that. Those kinds of earthquakes can be tremendously destructive.
We're talking again to Professor John Vidali of the University of Washington. He is director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. We are talking about a new warning system for possible earthquakes. And John, getting into detail about the warning system, to begin with, this system and the warnings would be issued across digital platforms. Talk about that.
Yeah, when we generate warnings, they would go out a lot of different ways. You know, the way to a lot of people would be cell phones. That's how they do it in Japan now. It plays a characteristic tone and tells you how soon the shaking's coming and how severe it's estimated to be. But it would also go out digitally to things like, you know, factories and telecommunications networks and traffic lights, bus drivers, surgeries. Could signal the beginning of kind of the organization of the emergency response to the earthquake. There's a lot of things that's important to do before the chaos of a major earthquake destroys communications and makes it too late to try to get people out of harm's way.
John, thank you. Professor John Vidali from the University of Washington and the director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Center talking about a new prototype earthquake early warning system. It is now 21 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. I'm Bruce Johnson.
Your employees want to do their best work. Give them the power to do it with new high-performance Dell systems like the XPS 13, featuring the world's first virtually borderless Infinity Edge display. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times their performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/business.
I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for Gordon Deal. We're all getting ready for the Super Bowl matching Carolina against Denver. Do you need some big game tips for watching the big game? Well, who better to get them from but a former NFL All-Pro player? Gordon Deal talks to him.
We're speaking with Terrell Davis, Broncos all-time leading rusher, also Super Bowl 32 MVP, and right now 2016 Hall of Fame nominee. You got to take me back to Super Bowl 32, because I think I was reading you had a migraine that day at some point during the game.
I did. I got a migraine in the end up. I got it early in the second quarter. I kind of played through it a little bit, and then when my vision started to go south, I had to leave the game, and that was when we actually it was the first quarter I got the migraine. The beginning of the second quarter is when I was in for one play, and then I left the game and missed the entire second quarter.
Right.
So yeah, I had to leave the game for that one. That was a tough one.
I forgot about that. How did you solve it? I know migraine sufferers everywhere are listening to your response here. What'd you do?
Well, fortunately at the time I had medication that helped with the aborting the migraine, and then once it came on, I had some that sort of helped the migraine settle down a little bit. But before the game, we were going out for pregame and getting ready to go out. I forgot to take the medication.
Oh.
Yeah, I was a little too excited about going out, and I had forgotten to take it. And then all of a sudden, I realized that I didn't take it. And you have to take it within, like, 2 hours before you exert yourself for it to work. And I didn't do that. So that kind of cost me a little bit.
Right.
Fortunately, everything worked out. We won the game, and all is forgiven.
I'm curious, how well do you remember the other details of that game? I was just looking at some of the notes. Like, yeah, that was a good halftime performance. You remember that, or did you not pay attention?
Not at all.
No.
I have no idea who performed.
It was the 40th anniversary of Motown celebration, man.
Well, I
had the Temptations in there. I don't know.
I didn't see one lick of the halftime show.
That's funny. Did the game plan for that day against the Packers call for you to run hog wild, or did things just, like, develop, I don't know, somewhat unexpectedly, I guess, that day?
You know, the game plan was to give me the ball 25, 30 times, and that was what we put in all week. And our first 15 plays, I had 9 runs. So, yeah, I knew it was going to be a heavy load for me that day. And they knew it, too. They knew the only way we were going to win that game was me getting the ball.
Yeah. Heavy dose of TD that day. Oh, man, they haven't forgotten that. I think some Packers fans think you're still running.
I know. I know. They still think I'm running. But I'm not running anymore. I mean, actually, I am now a spectator of the big game. And so I want to tell fans out there how they can be an MVP of their big game party. And it all starts with you watching the game. If you can't be there, you have to watch it on a high-quality TV, right? So a 55-inch LG TV, ultra-high definition.
Nice.
You can get this for under $700 at Walmart. That would set off your party. Then you've got to, if you're watching the big game, you certainly have to dress the part. So Walmart has NFL licensed gear with hats and sweaters and all that good stuff. You got to have that to set off the party. And then, you know, there's no big game party that I've ever seen where you don't have boneless wings. And by Sonic, you can get these delicious boneless wings by the sauces that I like. They have Asian sweet chili, they have a honey barbecue, and my favorite is buffalo. For more on that, you can follow them on Facebook. You can go to Twitter or Instagram, or you can download the app for more of their great offers on half-price wings on the big game Sunday. And, of course, last but not least, you got to be able to complement all this with Bud Light, which is the official beer of the NFL. And they've got these nice limited edition Super Bowl 50 aluminum bottles, which are awesome. And that's how you do it. If you want to be an MVP of your big game Sunday, you've got to have these items to make sure your guests enjoy that big game.
Man, is there a smaller list of things you're actually not endorsing? You're on quite a roll there. Good for you.
No, man, I mean, all this stuff goes hand in hand. I mean, this stuff is all. You think about football, what do you think about? You think about wings,
right?
You think
right.
about beer, right? You think about watching on a high-quality TV. So all this stuff, man, is in line with the big game. And then that's what we do when we do it at the Davis household. I don't know how you get down at your house, but that's
nice.
How we get down.
Good stuff. We're speaking with Terrell Davis, Broncos all-time leading rusher, Super Bowl 32 MVP, and that win over the Packers. Also a two-time league MVP, 2016 Hall of Fame nominee. How cool is that, by the way?
It's real cool. You know, I've learned to embrace it the last couple of years. You know, before that, I was kind of like, you know, I really, really was taken back by the amount of support and the fact that I was even mentioned in the same category with some of these great players. But it's kind of taboo, you know. You really don't know how to deal with it because it's not something that you can change at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you can go play and you can get more points to assist or aid your candidacy. So. For me, it was like, okay, I'm just going to enjoy it. you know, whether I'm a finalist or a semifinalist or even selected, I'm going to enjoy the process.
Former Denver Bronco All-Pro running back and two-time Super Bowl champion Terrell Davis talking to our own Gordon Deal, and I wonder who Terrell will be rooting for in Super Bowl 50. Many people who are cutting carbs in an effort to shed weight are running for the cauliflower, which has blossomed as a popular substitute for starchy food. Here to talk about that hot vegetable is Robin Seidel of the Wall Street Journal. Robin, and I sound like Seinfeld here, what's the deal with cauliflower?
Over the past few years, cauliflower has been become very popular among people who count their carbohydrates because cauliflower does not have a lot of carbs, and there are a lot of things you can do with it to kind of imitate starchy foods, like mash it to do a replica or a facsimile of mashed potatoes and things like that. Anyway, the cauliflower prices have gone up a lot in the past couple of months because there's been weather conditions in Arizona and California where a lot of it is grown. And so the prices have really gone up, and this is freaking out people who follow low-carb diets, especially people who started low-carb diets as part of their New Year's resolutions.
You mentioned people who mash it, but what else are people doing with it?
Well, it's not only what you're getting, but it's what you're not getting. So you're not getting the carbohydrates. So one whole head of cauliflower, which can feed several people, has fewer carbohydrates than one potato. So if you're counting your carbs, that's a big deal. And basically, you can kind of mush it up into a lot of different things. There are people who make like a pizza crust out of it. There are people who grate it, put it in a food processor and make what's called cauliflower rice. People do all kinds of things, and it's just really growing in popularity.
We're chatting with Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel. Robin, is this popularity new for the cauliflower?
Yeah, I mean, it's really been over the past few years. There are a lot of websites, low-carb websites, blog sites that really focus on the cauliflower. And, you know, they post a lot of recipes, and then it just becomes a chain reaction. There are people, I mean, and the stores even are kind of picking up on it. I think it's Trader Joe's sells frozen cauliflower rice. So it's a cauliflower that's already made into little bits. And a lot of restaurants are serving mashed cauliflower and cauliflower dishes as well.
All right, Robin, thanks a lot. Robin Seidel of the Wall Street Journal. It is now 6 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
When the NFL decided to alter its tradition of Roman numerals and change the title of its upcoming championship game from Super Bowl L to Super Bowl 50, it was generally accepted. But there was some blowback, not from football people, but from high school Latin students in North Carolina. 16-year-old Laura Shoak said she had studied Latin since the second grade, and to her, the move was not one to be taken idly. So she talked to her teacher. In classes, they talked about why the league should have kept the L. They wrote a letter to the NFL, and they got word back from Senior VP for Marketing, Jamie Weston, that the league next year will have Super Bowl mercifully returned to Latin. It'll be L-I instead of Super Bowl 51. And all is well with the world. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshinka, I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
There's got to be a better way to mail and ship stuff because going to the post office takes up too much time. Leasing a postage meter is just way too expensive. Turns out there is a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. You even get special postage discounts that you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in deal. That's stamps.com, then enter the code DEAL.